Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis and Blake Murphy. And this soccer report is brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed, pro all the way. Speaking of pros, Craig Forrest, former Team Canada keeper, Gold Cup MVP, in studio, Forrest. Craig, it's great to see you. We'll get to Team Canada in just a second. We just saw the Americans hold on for a 1-0 win over Iran today. They are through to the knockout stage. Mexico's still alive after getting thumped 2-0 by Argentina. But those are two sides that we saw during qualifying, and Canada taking 4 of 6 points against both of them. Different groups. It seems like Canada got the bum draw when it comes to the group.
Yeah, we'll blame it on the group, shall we?
I guess. Can we?
Yeah, we can a little
let
bit.
Us. I simply, yeah, you let have us, to tell let us. Us.
But you know what? That's exactly what I thought, too. I'm like, we pumped these guys.
I know.
And here they are. They're in the knockout stages. And, well, Mexico, not quite yet, but they're in the hunt. So, Costa Rica's not out of it yet.
That's true.
You know.
So. Yeah, and Canada looked far better than Costa Rica.
Oh, for sure. Miles better.
Yeah.
Really, we dominated the whole qualifying. So, yeah, it's disappointing from that standpoint.
Yeah, wouldn't it have been cooler if Canada won some of these games?
Yes, it would have been another way to phrase that question. Yeah. But, you know, it's interesting, Craig, because, yes, they looked very good against all those CONCACAF nations, and then we wondered how they would look playing against the world elite. Yeah. And then we saw the number 2 ranked FIFA nation in the world, and they looked the part for 90 minutes in a 1-0 loss. And then we saw Sunday. So explain the difference between what we saw on Wednesday and what we saw on Sunday. Because I can't, like, I know part of it is quality, and maybe Croatia's just better than Belgium, and we'll see those two meet up on Thursday as well. But does it go beyond that? Did Canada not play its best 90 against Croatia as well? Should that be part of the discussion?
Well, and then maybe, you know, Belgium were certainly, you know, not what they normally are, too.
That's
so
a good point.
How bad were they, or was that part of Canada? And I was asking the same questions. I was like, but every time they seem to get in these positions, somehow they managed to, you know, pass that, you know, with flying colors. And so I was getting, you know, pumped up as well. And then you saw what happened with Croatia, you know, and you're like, okay, well, that sort of made sense when you look at the quality they had, that it was potentially that could happen. But it didn't happen against Belgium. So, you know, that's why we had such optimism. But it just shows that we're not there, and the quality of that team. I think they had 7 Champions Leagues between them, just the midfield. So, you know, we know they have what it takes, and they're mentally incredibly strong, and they really showed us how to play the game.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's a side that was 2nd in the last World Cup too, right? So it's not just the experience in the European leagues.
Right.
When you look at how Canada performed against Belgium and Croatia, and how Belgium looked against Morocco probably recolors how we felt about that Canada-Belgium game. But, you know, we came into this tournament thinking that this was about arriving on the stage and seeing how close Canada is to competing on this stage, to get out of a group stage. Do you feel any differently about how close Canada is to getting there, and if they can get there by 2026 after those 2 games?
Well, we know we're going to get there. It's actually the big thing for them is, where are they going to play? How's the preparation? Where's the competition? Do they get invited to Copa America potentially?
Yeah.
That would be amazing. I mean, we qualified for that years ago through the Gold Cup, and unfortunately what was going on in Colombia at the time with some drug lords and the government pulled us from the tournament. So Honduras ended up finishing 3rd in that tournament. They replaced us.
Mm.
Yeah, they're like, well, we'll go. It's not exactly safe around here.
Right? Yeah, 6 of 1, half dozen the other.
But that would be great. But I think from the world stage point of view, I think we have in the offensive zone players that can compete. And John's obviously proven as a coach too that a group of players can really, you know, if you like, overachieve or punch above their weight. And they can do that. I think some of the data and, you know, this a lot of statistics everybody's using now, I think some of that you have to also remember that when you're in that situation, it doesn't matter what you're doing on the field, but leading up to the game, the amount of nervous energy, the amount of, you know, sleepless hours that you have, you also got to take that into account. You don't really have data on that. And I think that they look tired. They look tired. And I don't think it was from the running in the game. I think it's all the emotion of being at a World Cup and the magnitude of it. I really think that played its toll on their what they look like, certainly in the first half, getting tired early on.
So, like, what you're describing there, I mean, it sounds almost like a letdown. And I know they lost to Belgium, but that was like, that was an incredible 90 minutes. They deserved to win. They out-expected gold them by like two, right? They looked great against.
Although, what was your stat earlier about expected goals?
Yeah, fewer than 50% of the teams that have gotten the more expected goals in this World Cup have actually, won the game. So yeah, it's not an indicator of who's actually winning these games, apparently, that stat. But is that a thing that this team with no expectations going into this world power of Belgium and then outplay them for 90 minutes could go into their next match, and you don't get a whole week off either. It's a pretty compact tournament when you're talking about this level of play here too, that there could have been like just a mental letdown despite the fact that they knew they needed a result there.
And all these different experiences, even from, you know, John Herdman and the comments he made, I think that as much as it was, we know what it didn't mean anything personal to them. It could have been the red team, the black team, the yellow team. It didn't matter, just so happened to Croatia. But he let that slip. And he's got to remember that when you're in that situation, you're always leaving yourself open for, you know, they're going to take it to another level, especially tabloid newspapers in Europe.
Yeah. So we talked about this a little bit, and it does feel wild to talk about an elite nation like Croatia, a team that was in the final of the last World Cup, like turning it up another notch because the coach said he, like, essentially with some more colorful language, said, we want to beat that team. Like, how dare he say he wants to beat us?
Yeah.
Not that he didn't say we're going to beat them even, or like we expect to beat them. It's like, let's go beat them.
Craig, in your career, you guys always let the more polite teams beat you, right?
That's right.
That's how you determine how hard to try.
Yeah, exactly.
But especially
where these guys have been in World Cup finals and Champions Leagues and all that. But what he did, what the players did after, by mentioning it,
it sounds like
basically a little knife into John Herdman, and knowing that now people are going to question it. But when they cross that line and they go on the pitch, they're not thinking of John Herdman. They're not thinking of the goalkeeper being, you know, having a Serbian, you know, he is Serbian or Canadian-Serbian, you know, so they're not thinking of that. They're professionals, you know what I mean? But after the fact, we're going to have a little dig at that.
They also allowed a goal 69 seconds into the game. Like, if that was a thing, it certainly, why would it only kick in a minute and a half into the game?
Oh, that's a great point. But John also, like, not to mention that the players talked about it, that they were very aware of the narrative going into this thing, but John himself said that he would have changed things, that he wished maybe he didn't get caught up in the emotion, which was a little head scratching to me because this guy seems so thoughtful and it, like, calculating. And I really did think that was part of whatever game plan he thought was going to end up with the best results for his team.
Yeah.
This was a coming out party for Canada soccer in the World Cup, and Alphonso Davies, who doesn't need a coming out party, is one of the world's best, but it was also supposed to be a coming out party for John Herdman, and a lot of speculation that this might be the one and only World Cup that he's in charge of this team for, and that he would get all kinds of acclaim. Got to say that that's probably not the narrative he wanted surrounding him after a couple of matches of the World Cup.
No, of course it's not. And I think these are all learning curves for him as well, just like everybody else. It's like a bad back pass. You know, we all make mistakes, and I thought he handled it as well as he could. I did hear that he didn't shake the coach's hand off the game.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Is that unusual?
Yeah, it is unusual. Yeah. It's not even how they don't have to cross the pitch either. It's not like the NFL. Like, they're right side by side. So I don't know the full story. So I'll give him benefit of the doubt because that's not really his character either, I wouldn't think. So hopefully that's not the case. But it's just, you know, certain things that you have to think about at that stage that if you don't do, they're going to take it to another level. And are they going to blow it out of proportion? Yes. Yeah, they are going to.
It doesn't matter if they win the game, though, right? Or get a result. They don't look the way that they do, basically, for, 89 minutes of the game. If they win or get a point against Croatia, we're talking about what a great move it was. And it was, one of the highlight moments of Canadian soccer history. But they do lose 4-1. There's also a tactical component to Sunday as well, Craig, which I'm interested in because Steven Eustachio was banged up, so there's nothing you can do about that. But Atiba Hutchinson is 39, and really looked 39 for large stretches of that game.
I would agree with that, yeah.
So he is not substituted at halftime. Like, what did you make of that game tactically?
Well, I think from that point of view, because Eustachio got injured, I believe, in my opinion, that he would probably have taken Atiba off at halftime. But what had happened now is Stakhiou gets injured, and he's thinking about, you know, changing the significant part of that midfield all at once. And he's probably wondering about the pieces that he has and was thinking that he still needs a passer in there, and that's why he left a team in. Or I think he said after the game, I heard some of his comments about, you know, there's probably things that I should have done differently, but everybody can say that in hindsight, right? Because this team generally has played incredibly well. But there were certainly warning signs about Atiba during that game that, you know, he was tiring and looked 39. And we talked about, I think, last week before the games, you know, that
yeah.
that's, you know, as good as he is, he's still 39. And it's
which brilliant. Is very young as a human being, but not for a soccer player.
Oh, it's a young man's game. Isn't it a young person's game? The way they run around that pitch and how fit they are, it's the pace of it sometimes is just insane.
I looked up the list of, like, the oldest players to participate in the World Cup, and it's, like, if you get over 40, you're almost certainly a keeper.
Yeah.
It's the only yeah. position that ages gracefully. I guess, you know, there are Luka Modric exceptions.
Yeah.
In terms of the ages of players on this team and, you know, who is going to be around in 2026, and Ben, I know you want to get to the Davies thing, but a quick look ahead to Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Does John Herdman go a little younger on Thursday, get a few more guys, just a little bit of this World Cup experience ahead of 2026? Because I'm sure they'd love to play spoiler still, but the result doesn't really matter as much as, you know, building for the future, coming out of this World Cup, feeling good about the time he spent there.
Yeah, no, that's really true. And that's something he'll be thinking about. But at the same time, you know, you want to finish, you want to get points. We've never won a game at the World Cup. So this is a good opportunity to do that, playing your best possible squad. But there's also the side of that too, because there's certain players like, you know, Kone, for instance, that, you know, give him significant numbers, and that's going to put him in a great position in 4 years' time, just to be all aware of all the things that go around off the field at a World Cup, you know, the pressures of that and tickets and, you know,
how to pace yourself over 90 minutes against an elite side versus, you know, going, you know, it's probably a little different in TFC or MLS.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I know that John was looking at the data in some of the pre-games and saying that he thinks they are able to sustain that. Clearly they weren't, you know, for whatever reasons, they weren't able to do it, not even through halfway through the second game. So it'll be interesting what he does, really interesting. But it would be nice to finish with 3 points. Because if we finish, like, with 0 points and minus 6 or 7 goal differential, that's the craps.
Yeah. The Kone decision could be made for them as well, with Eustachio practicing, kind of doing his own work off to the side today.
Secret practice. He had his own
well,
practice.
Whatever the soccer term is. You know, he had a red jersey on or a non-contact jersey.
Yeah.
He was just doing his own stretching off to the side. But
he's not 100%, that's for sure.
Definitely for sure.
Too bad. No, it's pretty clear. But, okay, what you just said there, Craig, about, hey, it would feel kind of crappy to go 0-3 and to be minus 6 or whatever in goal difference. Mm. And it's maybe something that some people predicted going into Canada's return to the World Cup for the first time in 36 years. Mm. I will say that the experience of playing that game against Belgium on Wednesday and feeling like you were the better side and Davies missing the kick and just really dominating 90 minutes has changed everything for me. And maybe if these matches had been played in reverse order, it would feel differently to me. And, like, maybe Belgium just stinks. Like, maybe. I feel it's hard to believe that that's actually the case. Mm-hmm. But it almost feels also like we're having an evolution as soccer observers, those of us who are the casual soccer observers, in real time, that – it was supposed to be just gravy, the whole thing, all three matches, whatever happens. It'd be nice to score a goal, but even if you don't score a goal, hey, what a tough group. And they scored the goal. Whoop-a-dee-doo. It does feel like now are we allowed to be critical? Like, are we allowed to, if they get waxed by Morocco, who just beat Belgium and drew that Croatia side that beat you 4-1, they drew them and looked full merit for that draw. Like, is it reasonable to, at the conclusion of 90 minutes on Thursday, Canada's final match at this World Cup, to say, man, I expected a little bit better, or here's some things that obviously need to be worked on?
Well, as you know, and this, you know, this team's done so well leading up to through qualifying. Remember, there was, I think it was only, well, it was about 2 years ago when they played the U.S. in a Nations League game and the stadium was a third full.
Yep.
And Alfonso was playing, David's playing,
yep,
Pulisic playing. And on a Tuesday night MLS game against Columbus Crew, Toronto FC is filling that place out. There's something majorly wrong. So we've come from there, and we're now in this position where we are now, where this this team has taken us to a different level. And over time, it's a really slow baby steps, but just in the last 20 years, we've taken massive steps. Our women's program, right from 2002, the under-19 Women's World Cup, when Christine Sinclair was basically introduced to Canada and the world, it was a slam dunk. We had the 2007 under-20 Men's World Cup. That was brilliantly attended. It was great. So we put on great events here. And, you know, so the MLS teams, Toronto FC, Vancouver and Montreal, a massive thing. The rule changed that Canadians could play in that league south of the border. And not be foreigners about 5-6 years ago was a massive part of these guys having that step. But at the end of the day, the quality isn't quite there yet in MLS. I mean, that's proven. Even the U.S. team, I think today was 9 of the players were European-based that started that game. So you see where, you know, that quality is still there and better than they're producing here. But the blend, the young players leading into 2026 and that quality that we do have, I think a lot of them can make that next step. And I think that was kind of part of it. But yeah, if we want to be a proper football, soccer country,
we got to ask hard questions.
You
got to
ask the questions because, hey, they dominated qualifying.
Yeah.
The Americans and the Mexicans might go through.
Yep.
And when Americans are already through the knockout stages. So what's going on? So yeah, we should ask those hard questions. And that's coming. That's coming with all the good. You want all the good, the bad's coming too, because people are going to be critical. We knew that's the case. That's sports.
Yeah. And I love that part of it. That pressure is a privilege, as they say. So we've been alluding to this Davies thing. Alfonso Davies spoke to the assembled masses, the people who spent tens of thousands of dollars to travel to Qatar, finally got a chance to talk to the superstar of the men's program today. And then also he was referencing why he didn't speak after scoring the first goal in a World Cup by Canadian on Sunday. He said, I wanted to talk about the team play. I'm happy to be able to score, but at the end of the day, we lost the game, and that was really what was on my mind. It's all well and good. But what do you make of this? Because there's, you know, even people writing articles about how there's some level of discord between Davies or some separation in, I don't know, attitude. I don't know if it goes to the level of like locker room discord here, but there are also some world-class players who have spoken to the media, and there's been, and not that Davies hasn't spoken at all. He has an obligation, I guess, to speak to the rights holders.
Correct.
What do you make of all of this? You've played in the Premier League. Yeah. You know, you know, there is a hierarchy of player. If your best player does not take to the podium at the conclusion of one of your three World Cup matches, what does that indicate to you?
Well, I mean, a lot of people, they're mentioning in the media, a lot of people are like, well, you know, they don't care. They don't understand, like, the whole big picture that the media plays a massive part of the growth of the sport. The rights holders are the rights holders. That's fine, but Brazilians are talking to, 400 different media outlets as well that are non-rights holders. There's a lot of people in Qatar that do a lot of really good things and really, truly care about the sport and deserve that time, you know. One Soccer, for instance, I mean, they're the only group that have actually invested in the game, a Spanish company, and they're ignoring them for the most part. And it's like, well, you got to know who your friends are here.
Well, and like, I'm thinking of Christian Jack in particular, who had a great diatribe that people should check out on Twitter. This is a guy who Davies has made time for him. He did a really long extended one-on-one with Christian Jack. But yeah, that's somebody who's not just a fly-by-night dropping into Qatar to check in on this team. He's invested his career into it.
Yeah, exactly. And he cares truly about the program. So, you know, it's a bad look. It really is a bad look. And I hope whoever's handling him, apparently he was beside him doing the interviews today. Like, I mean, come on. Like, it's not that difficult. It really isn't.
Mm-hmm. But, okay, and he did it, so I guess we got to give him credit for that. It was
pressure, though. It was pressure.
Yeah. Yes. Like, certainly that somebody had to tell him that it's a horrible look, and yeah.
If I was there, I would have said the same thing as the media. I'd have been screaming at them.
What about as a teammate where if Davies doesn't speak there, you know, that puts more of the burden to, and I understand that he, you know, the way he phrased it was he didn't want his goal to be front and center when they had lost. And I can understand and empathize with that. I'd also imagine there was an element of he's playing with a banged up hamstring and has to go at, you know, you got to go do your post-match stuff. However, and this comes up in any sport, if one player doesn't talk, that shifts the burden of being the voice in that moment to other players on the team. And obviously Canada is fortunate to have a couple veteran leaders like that. Atiba talks all the time. But as a teammate, what does that feel like for you?
Well, I mean, times have changed for sure. I mean, I know this group is quite tight, but I mean, if that was one of my teammates, we'd be discussing it. Like, if we didn't think it was right, you need to face up. But there's also a degree of a lot of these guys living in Europe, they don't actually know what's going on the ground here either, you know? So they're just kind of, everything's kind of screwed. They don't like the association. They don't like the media. They just don't like everybody. And it's just kind of, you know, but the bottom line is like, this is an opportunity for you to, you know, look at the Super Bowl does, you know, they make everybody accessible. It's accessibility, right? And the CSA now just said, well, we're going to close shop. We're going to do it in-house. They do their own interviews. They're not making people accessible. And it's rather annoying. And they need to learn that this is a big business. If you want to be on the world stage where everybody plays it, you have to change your ways.
Is it just some people maybe not knowing what to do? Or is it like an indication of something that goes beyond, you know, the surface level here? Something that is, because people, when nobody speaks or when somebody doesn't speak, the you know, nature abhors a vacuum, right? And people try to fill that space with anything, right? And like I mentioned, Chris Jones and CBC wrote something today about the potential of Alphonso Davies feeling that he's above and beyond this team and that maybe being some problem within
because that's all they got to talk about because they didn't even make him accessible and they made all that, they went over there. I mean, okay, yeah, they're getting paid by the companies or whatever, but I know some of them aren't. They're freelance, and they want some sound bites. They wanted some lines from the star players, and this is the first time they've been any accessibility to Alphonso Davies at the biggest stage in the world.
But you would think that that Davies, having played in one of the biggest, European club, I mean, as far as competition is concerned, maybe not as far as like world value, like probably Manchester United's.
They're up there though. They're massive.
They are massive. And that there's probably a big demand on his times media wise, although he's not the biggest star. Maybe he's one of them on that team that it's not like this is a guy who's unaware of the impact of not doing that. So it's very confusing as to what's happening here.
Yeah.
I take a little bit of issue with that piece of taking, well, Davies didn't speak and there is nothing to fill in the gap. So I'm going to fill in that gap by taking this giant leap right over top of it to actually having a world-class player is a problem. And look, unless there's something that didn't make that story and something that's making the rounds of Qatar about Davies' relationship with the program that we are not privy to yet, that one seemed like a bit of a leap. We talked about it yesterday, Ben, the actual Davies speaking, and I hope I did a good job laying out like the reporter side of why it can be a beneficial two-way relationship. Like, this is all collaborative, ideally. But I thought that was, I don't know, it came, and I don't know Chris personally, it just, that one felt like a bit of a leap to me.
Yeah.
Unless there's a piece missing that we don't have
and
yet.
And the big piece of evidence that was laid out was that he is not the best penalty taker on this team and then took the penalty against Belgium. And
okay, write that piece after he takes the penalty then.
Yeah.
Don't wait for him to be mean to you to write that piece.
All he has to do is go up there and be himself. You know, be authentic. Just say it as it is.
Because he's got a great...
myself. I stood there, I was like, I lost my mind. I thought I had rigor mortis. He stood there for like 90 seconds. Like, just say something. That's all they want to hear. Like, it's not that hard. He's brilliant.
No, there's almost nothing he can say to lose the court of public opinion in this country.
Especially not against media. Do you know how easy it is for me to lose a battle like that if I got into one with a player?
Yeah.
It's true.
Well, he spoke and did so eloquently. And hopefully better results on Thursday. Craig, always great. Thanks for doing this, man.
Well, always a pleasure, guys.
It's Craig Forrest, and this soccer report was brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed, pro all the way. More of the Fan Drive Time when we return. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy. Got some baseball to throw your way. Blue Jays didn't do anything. You're just tuning in and you're...
You jerk.
I got some baseball to throw your way. Brandon Nimmo.
You want to talk about Mike Clevenger or something?
Brandon Nimmo, still available. He's out there. Yeah. Michael Conforto is, I guess, a talking point today because he's also still out there, but there's been some teams named by our good pal John Morosi talking about the Mariners. He's talking about the Yankees. But, yeah, the more you think about it, the fact that Conforto really can't play center field seems like it's a hard one to make work. And if you were going to go down that route, you might want to go with somebody who's a little more of a sure thing than a guy who has a shoulder thing and missed a whole year.
You don't want to solve your center field issue with a non-center fielder?
No, I like center fielders. But that being said, maybe I don't want anybody.
Look, if the price is right, then whatever. Another corner outfielder is fine, and you live with Springer playing part-time center field and having a fourth or fifth outfielder who can chip in there, similar to last year. But that's if the money's right. You're not spending the big money, I don't think, on a guy who you don't think can, at least for the next little bit, be a part of your center field situation. Are you looking at the Don Mattingly stuff?
Is that
what caught you off guard there? Joel Sherman and John Heyman of the New York Post reporting that Don Mattingly is in deep talks to join the Blue Jays coaching staff.
So this is interesting. So this was one that I was going to maybe get to later on in this segment. The Yes Network was reportedly to not engaged in talks, but like weighing the pros and cons of reaching out to Derek Jeter and Don Mattingly to be part of their broadcast team for next year. And Mattingly is the only one quoted in the story. And he's like, yeah, I got like some irons in the fire. So we'll see if that turns out. It seems like it might be turning out for Don Mattingly.
So a Mattingly quote from, so he was on a podcast with Joel Sherman and John Heyman. And again, that's at New York Post. And he said, they asked him about this and he said, one team in particular really talked to me and talked to really my soul of what I like to do and see a value. And it's been very interesting to me. So Sherman and, Heyman, which is a confusing one, too. I thought I was mixing names up for a second. They are revealing that mystery team as the Blue Jays. Now, the role is not specified within. Maybe it would be a bench coach because that position was at least a little bit in flux.
Isn't that a tough one, though, for a first-time manager to have a former manager as your bench coach?
But, I mean...
And a legend also?
Okay, but, like, what position is he in that... It isn't notable that Mattingly standing right there.
And I guess even if I was going to say front office, but this was the whole Eric Wedge thing, right? Eric Wedge wasn't on the coaching staff either, but he was the manager in waiting.
Look, this coaching staff is very large, and everything we hear is that it's quite collaborative and there are, you know, individualized roles further down the chain. But then the kind of big picture stuff is a team effort. And that's the front office, the analytics staff, There is Adam Udelman, used to be in the research and development department. He's now on the coaching staff. And you've got multiple pitching and hitting coaches. Sorry, hitting coach and hitting strategist. Pitching coach and pitching strategist. Maybe there's some sort of hybrid role there where they have a specific usage in mind for Don Mattingly. And the way Mattingly talked about it in that quote certainly seems like they scratched something with him. But yeah, I mean,
they talk to his soul, man.
Yeah,
this is his soul.
And is his soul, hey, I want to be around and provide my wisdom and chip in when John Schneider gets tossed, but I don't want the buck to stop with me and have to talk to media every day? Maybe. And if that's the case, then maybe Casey Kendall goes back down to Buffalo or something like that. Who knows? Maybe it's some like undefined, you're just around kind of role.
Make Vlad better role. That'd be a good job.
Teach guys how to be Don Mattingly.
Can you do that?
I mean, they tried it with Dante Bichette. I don't know. So that's interesting. I got to listen to more of the podcast. We're obviously learning this on the fly here.
Right. So that might be a topic for tomorrow. Not where I wanted to go, but yeah.
Do you worry at all about his sideburns affecting the Jays' presentability?
I do. But we know that he's willing to shave those sideburns. And I think as long as you're not Mr. Burns, that you will recognize his effort.
Hippie.
Yes. All right.
So you want to talk about pitchers?
Sort of. kind of, because I mentioned Brandon Nimmo, and he's the name on the tip of everybody's tongue as the potential savior for this Blue Jays team in center field. He and his 390 on base percentage and average-ish defense in center field, and body on the verge of breaking at all times. But yeah, capable.
But hasn't broke recently.
Yeah, yeah. Like he's fully together right now. It doesn't hit for power a whole bunch. Certainly not compared to Teoscar Hernandez, but he would be a real nice fit for this team. And it's not an exact dollar for dollar thing. The money you saved on Teoscar Hernandez and Brandon Nimmo is going to make north of $20 million. And you project Teoscar Hernandez in arbitration, it's not $20 million. And Eric Swanson is making a couple $1 million. But how about this? How about instead of spending the savings, because there's just no question about it. We talked about it ad nauseum. You're worse after the Teoscar Hernandez trade than before. The reason you do it is to free up money.
Yes.
Financial flexibility doesn't necessarily mean it's by acquiring a free agent. You could just be bringing in more money in a trade, but it doesn't even necessarily mean that you're freeing up money for an outfielder. You could spend your money on pitching and then stopgap it in the outfield. You could go out and get Kevin Kiermaier to maybe not play every day, but be
Biggio, Merrifield, Espinal, Moreno.
Sure.
Throw everyone at the corner outfields.
Yeah.
And center field, whatever. It's just an outfield.
Yeah. And we make it sound like we're already tipping our hand to where the argument is going here, but there's a really good argument to be made that that's where the assets should be allocated. The Astros won the World Series. This is not breaking news. They won the World Series. They have some good hitters on that team, and it's all well and good.
Even more good hitters today than they had last week.
Right.
With Jose Abreu.
Yeah, we'll see in 3 years. Yeah, we'll see in 3 years, but yeah. Astros during the course of the regular season were second in Major League Baseball in ERA. And if you watched the playoffs at all, you know they didn't win the World Series on the strength of a bunch of 10-9 games. They had pitchers after pitcher after pitcher after pitcher after pitcher in the rotation. And then in the bullpen, it was ridiculous. And some of the guys that barely pitched could have pitched. Lots of teams in the postseason.
You should be allowed to do postseason trades.
Yes.
And just be like, Astros, you have so many of them. What will it cost? Obviously, you would never trade with a playoff opponent, but it is funny to imagine, like, if you could do something like that. And it's like, yeah, well, you know, Yuli Gurriel can't hit anymore. Would you like a bat for anyone who can throw?
Yeah. Well, okay. So they won the World Series on the strength of pitching. We can all agree, right?
Yeah. At one point, they had... Like, when Lance McCullers got healthy, they had seven starters, and not seven starters in the way of, like, oh, Mitch White's down in AAA and yeah, Kikuchi's in the bullpen. Like, they had seven guys who it was really unclear what they were going to do. And, like, I remember kicking around a little before the trade deadline, like, could they look for this sort of pitching for corner outfielder? And corner outfield wouldn't have been the spot for them. But, you know, were they a candidate to do an in-season roster balancing move like that? And they didn't, because pitching's really valuable.
Yeah, it is. And it's if you can get it, if you can count on it, which is, I mean, the major sticking point when it comes to going after pitching and especially paying for pitching, it's something you can count on more than outslugging people. And the Blue Jays, they only played two playoff games. They led the playoffs in OPS, OPSing 762. The Astros won the World Series with an OPS under 700 because there's a bunch of good pitchers. That's the way the postseason works, is you don't get to face a lot of Mitch White. Sorry, yeah. But Mitch White has become the whipping boy. Like, he's like, even beyond Yusei Kikuchi, for some reason, Mitch White is the guy that you go to now when you think about, like, sixth, seventh starter.
Yeah, well, that's because that's what he, like, yeah. If the season started today, it doesn't. But he'd be the fifth starter, and the reason we are talking about starting pitching additions is because, well, one, you need more than five starters over the course of a year, and nobody in the system looks ready to be the first call-up. But also, you'd feel a lot more comfortable about things if Mitch White was projecting as your long man slash swing man slash 2021 Ross Stripling kind of role. And that's not disrespect to Mitch White. Like, that's the role he played on a very good Dodgers team. That's why the Jays acquired him. And I maintain optimism about him longer term, but if he's out of options,
you're not going to force him into the starting role anyway. So that is the spot that you're looking to upgrade. It's the same if we were unhappy with the bullpen depth right now instead of the back end. You might be looking at, well, why is everyone, you know, making Trevor Richards the whipping boy or Zach Pop the whipping boy? It's because that is the spot that we're identifying to upgrade. It's like Whit Merrifield hasn't been mentioned at all in the outfield mix because ideally Whit Merrifield's not in the outfield mix. It's just, I don't think it's rude to those guys. It's just the way the roster is right now.
I never thought it was rude either. I'm just saying it's funny that Mitch White is.
I just don't want Mitch White to be mad at me.
Seems like a lovely fellow, and I have lots of time for Mitch White, and I think it's a nice little trade as long as that Frasso child doesn't throw 10 million miles an hour and end up like as the best closer in baseball.
Also, Alex DeJesus is not nothing as a prospect. So.
Anyways, so what I would argue, I wouldn't because I do think Brandon Nimmo is the best option here.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like, you can convince me that this money is better spent in pitching. Now, higher end, like I don't think it's better spent on a bunch of guys who are like life and death to even be on your roster in the playoffs, but like give you more options as rotation depth. Maybe it's not even Andrew Haney, but like he would be a guy, like if you want to make the money work, like he is a guy that you, if that's it, you got one move, you got either a Brandon Nimmo or an Andrew Haney, and you can make the choice between the two, and Nimmo's probably going to be more expensive than Haney. Yeah, you can make the argument that higher upside, even for a guy who's not a lock for 30 starts or 200 innings, because nobody is really. It doesn't matter when you get to the postseason if you can do a 1-2-3 of Haney, Manoa, and Gausman, and then figure it out, and then like Barrios is your fourth starter at that point. Yeah, maybe.
And then Kikuchi and White compete for a spot, sure. And the other arm goes back to the bullpen. Like
and then you've got Kevin Kiermaier or some facsimile in center field. You piece it together, and maybe you emphasize defense in the most important defensive position outside of shortstop on the diamond. Maybe that's something that works. I think there's a pretty clear case to be made that it does.
So I have two thoughts on the general pitching versus hitting thing. And the first is that while our kind of post hoc analysis of what wins in the playoffs generally suggests you need really good pitching to win in the playoffs. Now, the Phillies didn't quite have that.
They figured it out. They had two good starters, and the Ranger Suarez
at the right time.
And they were able to figure it out.
The issue with doing at the end of the season or looking back at the last couple of World Series and looking at what worked is that I don't think there are many people out there who would tell you that they don't think pitching is really important and that you need it to win. The problem is that pitching is a lot harder to project than hitting, and the attrition rate on pitchers is higher than hitters. So what I mean by that is, A, if you go out and you sign Yusei Kikuchi, you are less certain that it's going to be low fours ERA Yusei Kikuchi, and
you are
less certain that Yusei Kikuchi will stay healthy for the whole year. Now, that the second part of that didn't materialize this year, but I'm talking about a guy in that price range, the Andrew Haney price range. That's what you're looking at. Whereas if you use that money on a position player, yes, guys get hurt all the time. Guys have skills erode and fall off. A high OBP part-time center fielder, part-time corner outfielder is about the most, who's coming off of a healthy season, even though he has an injury track record, is about the most projectable that you're going to have. There's bat to ball skill, there's on base skill, there's positional flexibility and high on the position spectrum. So if you need to move him somewhere, there's lots of room for him to go. That's one of the most projectable things that we have. So if you're the Blue Jays and you're looking at, to use a number, this is our last $20 million. How do we use it? Pitching might look like a thing that you need more at this stage, but there's also a greater chance that if you spend that $20 million on pitching, you don't get much back from it. Like, there's more room for it to go wrong.
Now, it's already gone wrong multiple times for this team. They hit Kevin Gausman, Barrios, first year of that extension, Kikuchi.
Now, do you look at that as... There's two ways to look at that. This front office hasn't done a good job evaluating their pitching gambles, or Pitching is really random, and a lot of times the deals won't work out. And hey, you're due for some good luck. Dude, the next one will work out.
If Barrios didn't work out, that was the guy that you thought was an absolute lock of all locks. There was not
the most
one dissenter on
player
that
in baseball.
Yeah, and that one didn't work out.
And this is what I mean by pitchers are a little tougher to, you need them, but it's harder to know what you're going to get from them. The other thing is that if you know what the term diminishing returns means, is like the more of something you have, the less impactful it is. If you won 150 games, you don't really need 150 first win. Mm. In offense, in baseball, the opposite is true. Mm. The more good players you can throw at an offense, the more upgrades, there is an exponential effect to that, because if Brandon Nimmo is getting on base at a higher clip, that's fewer outs being used. That's more guys on base for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. That's pitchers have to be a little more careful with Vlad because there's a guy on base. And then Teoscar isn't here anymore. Mm. I'll get over it eventually. Bo Bichette hitting behind Vlad then has more guys on base, or the pitcher's gone through more pitches, or there are fewer outs in the inning, and so on and so on. Statistically, we can prove this, and I did that a little bit with our lineup exercise with Teoscar versus Nimmo last week. So whether it's Nimmo, whether it's someone else, it doesn't even have to be a center fielder. That is something that this team has to consider, that, yes, all runs are – a run scored is a run saved. All runs are created equal. Ideally, you are balanced. That last bit of money or trade equity or whatever, though, could have a more projectable and a more exponential effect on the position player side than it could on the pitcher side.
Plus, it's more fun to score runs than to prevent them.
Yes, it is more. So where I'm going to undercut my own argument here, and it's not really an argument, I'm just laying out both cases, is that while it is very, very fun to score a lot of runs,
yes,
it is incredibly demoralizing to give up a lot of runs. And I don't really I'm not really excited for the next 8-1 lead if this is the pitching staff. And again, the bullpen depth is there. They had Eric Swanson. They have a couple good pitchers. But if someone listened to what I just laid out and were like, you idiot, they need pitching, I would understand, even if, you know, I just laid out a case against it.
Yeah, they're going to add pitching, right? And
yeah,
I guess we're talking about the caliber, right? Like whether you're going after a higher rung because you're spending the whole 15, 16, 17, 20 million bucks on a pitcher.
Which, by the way, apparently only gets you Mike Clevinger?
Yeah. It's not,
what are we doing here?
Yeah. Yeah. Man, Padres continue to create these prospects, but yeah, they I don't know how it works that they've kind of they've whiffed on a bunch of these trades.
If that's the market for Clevinger and Haney's market goes up after that, we might end up relitigating the Ross Stripling qualifying offer. It's also possible the Clevinger deal is just like a one-off outlier for the market, and that's part of why everyone's chilling right now. Like, whoa. Let's slow down. We're not paying a premium to get it done now.
Yeah, so for the record, Brandon Nimmo for me would be my number one choice. Because of the upside, because he becomes your best on-base threat, like, immediately next season, as long as he's healthy. It's hard to imagine him not being that, whereas even the most projectable pitcher, and by the way, Andrew Haney is not that. He's not the most projectable pitcher. Like, you want to talk about gambles and, like, you know, coming off a nice little season and guy with pedigree but hasn't really been this all that often throughout his career, this is him. So, I mean, in that regard, he's probably not going to cost you an arm and a leg, or at least as long as term is concerned, maybe. I don't know. Who knows?
It's going to cost you an arm and a leg, but maybe you have two more sideburns you can trade now with the Mattingly thing.
All right, so we'll track that. Maybe that's the story tomorrow.
By the way, Sunday, the winter meetings begin.
Yes.
So we'll have...
And we'll be there. No,
we will not. Oh. Our pal Ben Nicholson-Smith will be there, though.
Okay.
So I'm sure we'll have him on early next week to give us all the rumblings.
Yeah, and of which there will be many. I got a golf thing to throw at you. I know you're not the world's biggest golf guy, but so Tiger Woods has his own, he hosts a tournament in the Bahamas. It's called the Hero World Challenge, and it's limited field event, so there's no cut. It's kind of like a fun little thing. Everybody gets paid a bunch of money, and they golf in the sun, and it was expected that he was going to play in this thing. It was expected he was going to play in the match next week, and then it was expected the week after that he was going to play in the PNC Championship, which is this father-son thing. He was going to play with his son, Charlie, who's, seemingly a really good golfer. He's going to play in the next two things, but not in this thing, because he said, quote, I can hit the golf ball and hit whatever shot you want. I just can't walk.
So he has plantar fasciitis, and his legs are giving him issues, and the ramping up for the walking thing has given him issues. So the next two things are like made for TV events, the match and the PNC Championship. They're not real PGA Tour events. The match is made for TV thing entirely, and the PNC Championship, again, father-son thing. He can ride a cart in those two events. He can't in this thing because it's a PGA Tour sort of sanctioned event. And he was asked about, hey, man, there is a rule that allows you to use a cart if you are unable to walk. And we saw this play out a number of years ago. The fella named Casey Martin, who was his Stanford teammate, who had a birth defect in one of his legs, couldn't walk, and he had to fight the PGA Tour and point to the Americans with Disabilities Act to be given special dispensation to use a cart. Today, Tiger Woods, upon being asked about the prospect of him using that same act and the clause that exists amongst the PGA Tour to use a golf cart, said, quote, my teammate was Casey Martin, and what he did with the ADA, again, American with Disabilities Act, I voted against it. I think walking is an integral part of the game at our level, and I will never take a golf cart until it's sanctioned. So that there's something admirable about that is that, you know, guy could take a cart and I guess play really well. He says he shoots like 5-6 under when he gets to take a cart when he's practicing. But yeah, that he can't walk, and that's the only thing holding him back from playing in this tournament, and could be the only thing holding him back from playing in future tournaments. So he's there's something admirable about that. It's also weird. And also, I played golf, and I generally play better when I walk. And I know it's different maybe when you're
an elite athlete.
Yes. I don't know. You're just more into the game than like sitting in a cart and your mind wanders and you're looking at your phone or whatever. I don't know. This it is.
You look at your phone when you're on the course?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That surprises me.
I keep my score on my phone as well.
You're like a big golf guy, right?
Oh, I love golf. Yeah, I live for it.
See, I'm like a once, maybe twice.
I wish I didn't. I look at my phone all the greatest thing ever is when I got to go to the Masters in 2017, and they do not allow you to even bring your phone onto the grounds. It was the greatest thing I've ever experienced in my entire life. I love
that. I'm usually pretty tethered to my phone, but not on the odd golf round. Leave it in the bag.
Mm. Anyways, any thoughts on
nothing important is gonna no one's gonna get a hold of me.
Yeah, it's ever.
No, my thought on it is at first when you brought it up before the show, I thought you were joking. I couldn't believe that this was like a real thing and a real story. Like certainly
that he voted against his buddy to take
fake.
A cart.
Yeah,
no, that no, that's a I real thought, thing
know,
that happened today.
I know now. I looked it up. I thought you were giving me the gears.
No that real is, thing.
That's awful. Like, if you are voting against something in the American Disabilities Act, yeah.
Especially when your friend stands to benefit from it?
Yeah.
Or teammate? I guess not friend. Teammate.
It's certainly not friend anymore. Imagine, too, like this was his first time finding out. And he's like, wait, I didn't know who voted against it. And this is, no, you know, without digging in on the specifics there and understanding, like, I don't know, can we quantify the effect of being able to ride a cart? Like, is someone taking that analysis and showing that it's actually an advantage?
You can do it.
I'm not going to do that. It's just a little odd to me. If Tiger doesn't want to ride a cart, cool. These aren't huge events, so I don't really see what the harm is.
I think he should, you know, just swallow his pride, take a cart, because I like watching Tiger Woods. Time now.
I'm just sorry. I'm just trying to think of, like, this coming up in other sports, and it's just amusing to think of different way. And I don't mean to make light of Casey Martin's very real disability and the fact that he needed that. I just, the idea of something like a golf cart existing in another sport.
I think Matt Murray should be brought to every hockey game in a golf cart. I think to protect
the old
him.
Bullpen cart.
Yeah. Time for Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. Matthew Tkachuk making his return to Calgary Flames -150 against the Panthers. Panthers +128 tomorrow in the World Cup. Mexico, that other CONCACAF nation, trying to get through against Saudi Arabia. They are -143 to win that game. Saudi Arabia +390. And Messi, his Argentina squad against Poland. Argentina -200. Poland +700. And that was Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. I'm coming to work in a cart tomorrow. Until then, have a great Tuesday, everybody. See you later.